This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Life is a matter of perspective. You thought your mom would understand when you said you might call her and didn't. It was no big deal. To your silently brooding mother, it was just another sign you don't love her. Sound familiar? Yeah, we've all been there, done that. It's a bit embarrassing. Even after being a veterinarian for over 20 years and a lifelong allurophile, cat lover, I must admit there are so many times I just don't understand my feline patients or my own two cats, Quitty Vitty and Zimzala. But I'm getting better, and I know I'm not alone. Not viewing the world through your cat's eyes is one of the reasons why they receive less medical care than their canine counterparts. Why? Often it's because cat owners can't handle the drama and angst that surrounds bringing them in for an examination. There's got to be a better way. Behavioral issues can masquerade as medical conditions, such as inappropriate elimination, even chronic vomiting and diarrhea from stress-induced intercat aggression. Sadly, cats are often relinquished to shelters because of owners' perceived irreconcilable differences. In reality, many could have been avoided with some patience and change of perspective. Basically, seeing the world through their cat's eyes. My guest is Dr. Sandra Mitchell, a board-certified veterinary practitioner in feline and exotic companion mammal medicine. She is also fluent in cat. We'll be right back after this short break.
It's designerpetsweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit designerpetsweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Large or small, we fit them all. designerpetsweaters.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Mitchell, thank you so much. I think I'm going to be learning lots about my own two little felines today, so thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, so I have to ask, you say in your bio that you've been fluent in cats since you were young. Tell us about that one.
Well, I grew up with cats, and my mom had some fairly strict rules for us that we were not to approach the cats, that they would let us know when they wanted to be handled or picked up or petted. And so I spent hours and hours and hours as a child sitting on the floor trying to communicate with the cat and get it to come over to be scratched or to sit on my lap. And through that, it was a very valuable lesson in that I learned to read a lot of cat body language. And mom was indeed right. The cats do let us know what they're thinking and what they want, but we have to be patient enough and open-minded enough to look for what those signs are. And we need to kind of learn to find that common ground from what the cat is telling us. They're not going to learn English, and so we're somewhat obliged to go ahead and learn cat from that perspective.
Wow, that is so insightful of your mom to say, just sit there and they'll come to you. Because that is definitely cat. You know, if you try to rush them, it's like, I'm going the other way. So there's so many times you're sitting there, and I know people, I don't like cats. So they go into somebody's house and they're just sitting there and they're avoiding looking at the cat, and the cat just seeks them out because, ooh, you don't want to have anything to do with me? You must be interesting. I want to learn more about you.
Exactly.
So it seems like body language is really important to try to read cats. as you've been doing this for so long now and being a veterinarian and a board certified specialist, what are some of the main behavioral issues that you're seeing in your practice with cats?
Well, we see a lot of behavior problems, and it might be almost one of the most common reasons owners bring their animals into us, although they may or may not realize it at the time. Very often, they may think that they actually have a medical issue, and then it winds up being behavioral. We also do see the inverse, where people think they have a behavioral issue, and it actually turns out to be medical. But some of the most common problems we see are things like not using the litter box properly, scratching or clawing on items in the house that they shouldn't be. A big one that people will avoid coming into the hospital for is that it's just so darn difficult sometimes to get the cats into the carrier and then listen to the yowling and have all the pee and the poo everywhere by the time they get to the hospital. So our cats actually do stretch our limits in a lot of different ways when it comes to behavior issues. But some of the biggest ones that we do see tend to be litter box issues and clawing issues.
Okay, so let's start off with, yes, I have to admit, when my own cats need to go in for their dentistry or their vaccines, and you know, I can bring the vaccines home, but they look at me like, oh my goodness, you did what to me? So I'm just mom when I'm at home. So I know, I hate taking them in. My own cats, they yell. Thankfully, they don't usually poop or pee. But what can you do? What can I do to make that trek of 15 minutes for me less traumatic for me and the cats?
There are actually quite a number of things that you can do. And the cats are very good at reading our body language. They may have limited English skills, but they have excellent body language skills. And they will know right from the minute that you make the appointment that you've made the appointment. Even my guys know if they're going into the clinic, if I walk through the house with shoes on, it is a clear bullseye that somebody is going into the clinic, and they dodge in all directions. They know I usually walk through the house barefoot, and as soon as they put the shoes on, they know somebody's going in. And so we kind of have to think through the problem right from the start. And what I recommend when owners make appointments and they have skittish cats is to ask the clinic if they have a quieter time of day than another, that perhaps the appointment could be scheduled if they're not already going to an all-feline practice or an all-cat practice. Some practices will limit the first of the day appointments to accommodate emergencies, or sometimes the very first appointment slot after lunch can be quiet. And so asking when you schedule the appointment if they have a time of day that might be quieter than others or has cats scheduled already on either side of it will help to make the waiting room experience a little bit less stressful. But as far as actually getting the cat and getting it to the vet, my preference is actually to use a top-loading carrier instead of one of the carriers that have only a front door, but a top door as well. And if you get this carrier out 2 or 3 or 4 days before the visit and just let it sit in the house, it's kind of part of the furniture and it's no longer suspicious. The cat's had a chance to check it out on their own terms, as opposed to every time I see the carrier, I have to head into the hospital. This way, the carrier is just there. It's part of the environment. It's not quite so threatening. And then when it's time to go for the appointment, it's as simple as just lifting up the cat and kind of dropping them through the top door as opposed to stuffing them forward. Nobody likes being stuffed into a box. But gravity takes over.
And it's amazing how those four little legs will just go out and they hold onto the sides and there is no way that you are bending those legs. Yes.
Isn't that true? It's kind of like Spider-Man. You know, they go all four different directions and you're just not going anywhere. And the top loaders completely avoid that problem. It's so much easier to get them just kind of dropped right in through the top. And then the other things that really help will be doing things like avoiding giving them breakfast if possible. If your cat tends to get car sick, if they have a nice empty tummy, they won't be as likely to get car sick. And then something that might be kind of counterintuitive, a lot of owners like to ride the carriers sideways so the cats can see out of the side windows. But then the world is going by really fast and sideways, which tends to be scary and a little bit nauseating. So if instead you turn the carrier, they're getting the same view that the driver would get, either directly out the windshield or directly out the back if they're in a hatchback. It's a little bit less scary. Things aren't moving as quickly and it's not as intimidating. And then you can put a towel over the carrier so that they don't get all of that extra stimulation on the sides. And lastly,
Dr. Mitchell, what do you think about pheromones?
Yep. That was just what I was going to say. Lastly, the thing that you can consider is great minds think alike. You jump right in with me. You can treat either the towel inside the carrier or the towel around the carrier with some pheromones to try to give them some calming, it's okay smells in their environment. And that will also often help to kind of soothe them just a little bit. So there's a lot that we can do right from our body language and our appointment scheduling all the way through the transport that will help. It's still not going to make it a wonderfully fun experience for everybody, but at least not make it the miserable experience that it is for many owners and cats.
One of the things that I find I really like doing is if we're having a crazy practice day, I will tell, well, this was pre-corona, I would tell people to go ahead, just leave the cat in the car if it's not a hot day. Come on in, let us know that you're there, because oftentimes you have a dog barking or something's going on or a cat's crying in there. And it's like the other cat comes in, it's like, whoa, something's going on here. And yep. If it's warm, et cetera, and they want to bring the cat into the practice, oftentimes they'll put it on the ground. It's like, no, put it up, you know, keep it in your lap, keep it up off the ground. So that gives them a little bit different perspective. Yes, cover it up. And oftentimes people with dogs, they mean the best. You know, oh, my dog loves cats. Well, my cat doesn't really want to see your dog. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
It's scared and it's in this carrier. So you cover it up and they don't have to see it.
Very true.
Good ideas. I like that. All right. So now we finally, I'll ask you the question because I have two cats. And oftentimes it's probably my fault. I figure I just want to get this over with. I'm going to take both cats on the same day. And I figure I'll sometimes have the carriers out. And then I start closing doors and their little ears go up. It's like, mom has something planned. And without talking to each other, they somehow give off their little message to the other one, run and hide. What can I do in that case?
That can always be a little bit of a problem. And what I do with my kids, especially when I have to catch up more than one, I will often, a few days before I need to get them in the carriers, I'll start a little habit. For example, if I want to load them at 10:15 in the morning, I'll start a little habit for a week or so beforehand that at 9:45 or 10 o'clock, I will give a little treat or snack in the room where the carriers are. And they start to expect that. Cats build expectations extremely quickly. And within a few days, they're reminding me that it's time to go have a snack near the carrier. And then at that point on the big day, I only have one door to close. They've typically followed me right into the room where the carriers are for their snack. I simply close the door behind them, and then I have a fairly small space. And in my environment, I'll often use the bathroom because it is the smallest space and there's not much for them to hide under. And so even when I've moved with as many as 15 cats at a time.
That
your technique
own?
Has worked of my own, correct.
Okay, you definitely do like feline medicine. All right, I love it.
But that technique has even worked because I can get them all or at least almost all in a small area at one time. And then it's just a matter of the dash and grab to get them loaded. And usually I can have them in the carriers before they know what's hit them, especially when I only need to get one or two cats at a time, just by kind of building that expectation that, you know, treats come out at a certain time and then just on the target day, treats are immediately followed by carrier loading.
All right. I'll have to give it a try. I'll work myself into that one. And you had mentioned too that inappropriate elimination is a real issue with cats. And I'd love to give from the feline perspective why all of a sudden that pile of laundry looks, clean laundry, of course, looks so good and so much better than your kitty box. And why going to poop on the top of the stairs or on the linoleum is better than trying to get into that cat box. Please tell me that cat perspective.
Well, unfortunately for us, there are a lot of different reasons that cats will use it to signal that something's not quite right in the world of cats. The very first thing that we always need to rule out is that there's a medical reason for it. Obviously, if kitty has a urinary tract infection, We don't want to spend weeks trying to interpret what the issue is. We want to figure it out quickly and get her treated. So first step for any kitty that's not using the litter box properly should be a medical workup and a look-see to make sure that there is no infection, that there are no bladder stones, and that there's no concrete reason why they're not using the litter box. And then once the veterinarian has ruled that out, then we kind of move more into environmental reasons, which are actually probably the most common. You know, when you think of it from a cat's perspective, they're walking into the equivalent of a porta potty at a state fair. They are going into typically a small, sometimes enclosed space if we're using a covered litter pan. And then they're expected to eliminate and they're surrounded by all the smells and the dust and everything else from their litter. And then when they come out, they've got to do something that would be completely disgusting to us, which wash their feet off and then kind of go on with their day from there. So when you think about the joy of maybe going into a litter box that hasn't been cleaned in 12, 24, 48 hours, or going on a nice pile of clean laundry, I think the choice might be fairly obvious. And so from a cat's perspective, the more appealing we can make the litter box to the cat, not necessarily to us, but to the cat, the more likely they are to go in and use it. And so kind of trying to see the litter box environment from their perspective is probably our most useful technique in figuring out, number one, why they're not using the box, and then number two, solving that problem and getting them back into the litter box.
I love your analogy of using that porta potty because, yes, I'll oftentimes mention it to clients and going, it's a hot summer day and you're in this porta potty and people are just out there waiting to get in. It's like, is this something you really want to do? And if you could, you'd probably go out in the woods, but.
Exactly. So and the cats are no different.
And I love the fact, you know, how often do you clean the box? Ooh, like every other day. And my usual retort is, and how often do you flush the toilet yourself? And it's always that aghast look. It's like, each time. I said, well, your cats are no different. So please, hop to it. So why do they oftentimes do it just right next to the box? Is it the same idea? Is just not clean?
So often when they go right next to the box, they're delivering a very strong message, which says, I know where you expect me to go. I know this is the bathroom spot, but there's something about it that I really don't like. And so I am willing to use this spot, but I'm not willing to go into that filthy mess that hasn't been cleaned for 48 hours. And so those cats tend to be the easiest to treat because most of the time they're saying, I'm willing to use the spot. I am cooperating with you almost fully, but you need to kind of pull your weight and do something more about the box that I don't like. Now, occasionally we do see some older or some arthritic cats that are actually standing in the box and they think they're going, but it's
so
actually
close.
They can't arch their back the way they should. And so they're spraying out over the edge. And so it looks like they're going outside the box, but they actually did everything they were supposed to. They just kind of missed the target. So occasionally we will see that as well. But if the cat is intentionally using the floor, say, 3 or 4 feet away from the box, they're letting us know there's something about the box in particular that just isn't up to their standards. Either the litter's too dusty, the box isn't clean enough, there's a cover over the box. A lot of cats hate those hooded boxes. There's something in particular about that box that just doesn't quite meet their standards.
And I had a cat myself who's saying the same thing about, you know, I thought, what a horrible kitty. This kitty would get in the cat box and it would pee right over the edge. And then it's like, maybe it can't scoop down. So then what I did was a high edge box that it could step into, but I put it into a spare bathtub that I had, plugged the drain. So then if it was outside of the box, not a big deal. It was easy enough to clean up that bathtub. So that worked.
Yep. So one problem there is some cats can't jump into the bathtub. So for those kitties, what I actually like, oh, there you go. Well, those high-sided sweater boxes work really well, like you would use for under the bed storage or in the closet storage. And then you can just cut one wall out of it so that they can walk in and walk out, usually on the short end. And you can cut it almost right down to the ground. And they'll typically walk in, turn right around, and then they'll just pee down the side of it, and it's all on the plastic, so it's easy enough to clean up at the, you know, the end of the process. But those
Dr.
sweater
Rachel,
boxes work really well.
Love that.
Yeah, they'll work well.
We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about the types of litter. There's so many different litter types that are out there. And what do cats really like versus what do we really like, since we're not using it? All right. So we're going to be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
I've had bluefin Amazon parrots and cockatiels and finches and cats and a little Lhasa Apso, a Maltese. She's like 22. A yellow lab Floyd, a black lab Murphy. Murphy's coat, it's very, very shiny, like it sparkles in the sun. And I'm also a part-time dog trainer, so I will always endorse Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
Why wait until your dog is shedding like a monster? Save your dog from the agony, the misery of being stinky and having hot spots and shedding, and making sure that they have the proper nutrition.
The omega-3 fatty acids,
flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa, the digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Get them started early. I mean, your dogs will love you for it. My dogs do puppy zoomies around the house.
You won't believe how happy your dog will be.
I get my Dynavite at DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Okay, Dr. Mitchell, you definitely seem to know cats super, super well. Cat litter types. There's the pelleted ones. There's the organic ones made out of corn. There's the sandy one. They're the clumpy ones. They're the scented ones. What do cats really like?
I was going to say, almost all of those are made and marketed for humans and not for cats. What cats really like is to have something as close to outside dirt as they possibly can. You think about most cats, they're going to go out and use the kid's sandbox if they have the option to. It's soft on the feet. It's easy to move. They really want something that is unscented, dust-free, and generally clumping, because it can be kept cleaner than non-clumping litters. And so for the most part, in trials with cats, and they've actually done these and they've done studies, the vast majority of cats will be looking for an unscented, dust-free, clumping litter, believe it or not, that's in the box roughly 2 inches deep. That seems to be their preferred depth as well. That's changed every day, and then have the box dumped out, washed, dried, and refilled at least once a week. So they like pretty high maintenance litter pans, but all of these fancy keep the smell for 2 weeks kind of a deal, cats just aren't into that.
All right. I guess, well, I'm already scooping my box twice a day. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're supposed to have one cat box per cat and one for the house. So if you have two cats, you should have, in theory, three cat boxes in a house. Is that correct?
That is correct. We call it the scrambled egg theory, just like making scrambled eggs. One more box than you have cats. And then we don't want them all in one location. So, for example, if you have eight cats and you have 10 litter boxes that are all down in the basement, somebody's not going to be happy with that arrangement. So they should be scattered on each floor of the house in an area that's convenient to the cat, not tucked away in a corner or behind a chair or, you know, someplace that's hard to get to. So they like to have privacy, but not difficult to get to privacy. And certainly having them all in one area, it usually is not going to be suitable for multiple cats.
And Dr. Mitchell, what did you do when you had 15 cats?
I scooped a lot of poop.
And a lot of boxes. I am impressed. Yes, that took
I think I had 22 or 23 boxes at the time. And I actually used the cement mixing tubs that you can get at places like Lowe's, Home Depot, hardware stores, because they were fairly inexpensive and they were fairly sturdy. And I generally throw away my boxes every 6 months or a year, because the plastic can start to absorb odors and so on. And so I would use those cement mixing tubs because they were nice and large and the cats really seem to like them. And they're certainly less expensive than commercial litter pans.
I've used them too. I love them. All right. So you have this cat who decides that it wants to, you have a two-story home, and it's going to poop at the top of the stairs. Why?
Sometimes, especially with stool, cats may do that, number one, if the litter box is downstairs and it's just too much work to get down the stairs. And so sometimes they'll get as close as they reasonably can to the litter box and just not put in the effort. It's kind of the same reason why if we live in a two-story house, there's always a whole array of things cluttered at the top and the bottom of the stairs waiting to go up and down. We're just a little too lazy to make the run, so we leave it at the stairs to do it the next time around. So some cats will do that out of laziness. Some cats will do that as a little bit of a territorial marking. So it's kind of a cross junction where everyone in the family is going to travel. And if the cat feels the need, especially if there's, for example, a new cat in the household and some stress, if they feel the need to say, these stairs belong to me, what a better way to make sure everybody knows that than to leave a little calling card there. And so sometimes that can be a sign of territory marking. And so that's an important distinction of, do we have a medical concern here? Do we have a lazy cat here? Or do we have another behavioral issue that we need to uncover?
Speaking of uncovering, cats love to scratch and uncover that layer of furniture, rug, or wall that's underneath where they've just scratched. There is such a controversy of to declaw, not to declaw, but yes, in a perfect world, cats would use scratching post, and so often they don't. Why do they scratch? Is it just our little local felines, our domesticated felines? Because it seems like wild cats will do it also, lions and tigers. So tell me about the scratching routine.
So scratching is a completely normal cat behavior. It has a lot of different functions. Some of it, as we were just discussing with leaving a little calling card, is actually a marking behavior or a territory marker. They're kind of proud of their house. They like their owners. They're happy to live here. And they want to make sure that any and all other cats that may pass this way know that this belongs to them and not to really mess with it. And so cats will very commonly leave not only a visual marker that they were there with the scratching, but also what we call an olfactory marker or a scent marker. They have scents in the pads of their feet that are unique to them. And so when they put their feet on something like your sofa, they are leaving their own personal smell there that says, this sofa belongs to me and don't even think about sleeping here. This is my sofa. And so it's a very normal and natural way for cats to mark their environment. And yes, you are correct. Wild cats will do that as well. There are tons and tons of documentations of wild cats of almost every variety, marking trees in their environment, marking everything. And it's just a silent way to let any other cat that comes by later in time know this belongs to me. And so time to avoid this. It's a way of conflict avoidance in cats. They see that another cat is there and they kind of say, all right, you know, time to boogie on a different direction because someone already has this territory state. So even cats that are declawed usually will continue to go on clawing and scratching as best as they can to mark that territory.
So you have a cat that wants to mark their territory and this is my couch, but we say, no, we want you to use the scratching post. And there's all sorts of different ones, tall ones, little ones, ones with sisal rope on it, carpet. How do you find the one that your cat will like? Is it always just a matter of trial and error? What can you do to optimize the fact that this is where I want you to scratch?
If you look at where your cat is already scratching, they will give you some clues. And my guess is if you buy the little teeny weeny thin 2 foot high scratching post on a narrow base and put it next to your sofa, the cat will probably walk right by the tiny scratching post and right over to the sofa. They like sturdy. And if you're thinking about the purpose of why they're scratching, they're marking their territory. And so they want something that really stands out. In the woods, a bobcat will find the largest tree around and scratch on that tree so that everybody knows this big tree is part of my territory. In the living room, the cat is going to look for something that's in a high traffic area, that's a good size, that's sturdy, that isn't tucked away in a tiny little corner, and is near something valuable. So for example, a window view or the food and water bowls. And so if we want our cats to use our scratching post, the real trick is to, again, find something that they will like and something that they will be proud of. So if they are a vertical scratcher on the side of the sofa, finding something that has a lot of vertical space for scratching is pretty valuable to the cat, and putting it in a spot that's going to be important to the cat. So for example, near a window or near food bowls is also helpful. If the cat is a horizontal scratcher on carpet, then looking for a scratching post with those characteristics is more likely to be popular.
All right, Dr. Mitchell, I have a front room that I like the furniture, big window, birds are out there, etc. I have a certain decor. Really a big, huge cat scratching post in there. It's like, you know, I know I'm never going to be Architectural Digest material, but, you know, a cat scratching post is not the most comely thing to have in a room. So are we decorating for us or decorating for our cats?
I guess that depends on your point of view.
Your perspective.
Exactly. You know, from the cat's perspective, your furniture has limited value. It's a territory marking type of a thing. And if you really want your furniture to be reasonably intact, the only way to convince a cat not to scratch on things that are yours are to give them something that's theirs that they're allowed to scratch on. You may be able to compromise with the cat. Maybe the living room is off bounds, but you have a spare bedroom that you can make really, really attractive to the cat. So sometimes we find some compromises, but unfortunately, really the only way to spare your furniture is to find an acceptable compromise that works for the cat as well as for you. And speaking as someone that has cat trees right in the middle of my living room, I guess I have a bit of a skewed perspective, but I also have intact furniture. And one of the ways, once you're training your cat to use the scratching post, double-sided sticky tape on your furniture often works really well. Test it in a small area to make sure it doesn't damage the furniture. But when the cat puts their claws up on the side of the sofa and it sticks there, not very much fun to scratch there. But then when it can run over to its scratching post at top speed and hit it and you know, climb it and scratch and play, that makes it a little bit more appealing. So making your furniture less appealing and making the scratching post more appealing. And sometimes it does take careful location. If you do have a spare bedroom, putting a whole bunch of bird feeders outside those windows, moving the cat's food or water bowl into the area, making that room kind of the cat's, will work. But unfortunately, cats will scratch, and it's part of being a cat. And so it's one of those things that we kind of have to accommodate, and kind of thinking of it in the dog world terms, you know, dogs will bark. We can try to negotiate about when and how loudly they bark, but dogs bark. And unfortunately, just like dogs bark, cats scratch. And so we have to kind of work within the framework to some extent.
Well, I sound mean, but my cats actually do have a scratching post in the living room so they can actually get up in the window and they look outside better and see their little birds. So yes, and they don't scratch on the furniture, knock on wood. So I'm happy with that one. So thank you for your
perspective.
There you go. Okay, you had mentioned about bringing another cat in the household. I just got an email from one of my clients, has an older cat, Sunny, and Sunny is kind of on its last little paw and wants to bring a buddy into the house. What's your view about bringing the buddy?
Well, that can be a definite challenge, especially with an older cat and one that's kind of frail. When you think about it again from the cat's perspective, we're bringing in a new roommate that's going to share their space and share their territory, and they have essentially no say about it whatsoever. So it would be kind of like me picking a friend for you and moving them in and saying, here's your new best friend. I hope you like them. This is non-negotiable. And so that can be a huge amount of stress for a cat, and very slow, careful introductions, especially with an older cat, are needed to make a situation like that work. But again, from a cat's perspective, they may be perfectly happy to be alone. Cats tend to be a little more solitary than some of our other species, and they're happy with our companionship and don't necessarily feel the need for other feline companionship. But when we do introduce it, a new companion, we have to realize that this is 100% our choice and our setup, and our cat may want nothing to do with this. And so they may appear to be really cranky and mean and hiss and growl. And it's kind of like, well, I got you this kitten so you'd have a friend. And it doesn't always turn out that way. Just like I won't always pick the perfect roommate for you, no matter how much I try to find a good roommate for you. It's never going to be as good as a roommate that you picked for yourself, unfortunately.
So those planned roommates or planned marriages sometimes don't work out. So how do you introduce? You have maybe not this old frail sunny kitty, but you just have a six-year-old cat and you say, okay, I'm going to bring you home a friend. I saw this kitten and I just fell in love with it. I hope you will too. How do I introduce the two of them together? Or should you always bring a kitten in?
You know, I find that kitten introductions are usually fairly successful, and they often seem to go a little more smoothly in my experience than trying to introduce two adult cats. But given that, you know, I've already fessed up that I've had as many as 15 cats at a time, actually, I think I've even had more than that at once. I've had a lot of practice at introducing new cats. My technique is that I put the new cat in its own small room, and it may be a spare bedroom, it may be a bathroom, but I put them out of the mainstream of traffic with their own food, water, litter box, toys, and everything. And they are separated from the rest of the household, usually for a month or more, believe it or not.
Whoa, during that's that time, a really long time, a month.
It is.
So you have a lot
but
of patience.
During that time, the cats actually get to introduce themselves kind of underneath the door. And as you come and go, you're bringing in scents both from the house into the new cat and from the new cat out to the rest of the household. I've been known to kind of bring dirty bedding from one area to the other and just kind of leave it. So everybody kind of gets to know everybody, kind of like, again, with that roommate, you know, going out to the bar, going out to dinner, getting to know yourselves a little bit without actually moving in together. The cats get to know each other a little bit through the door. And then when everybody seems to not be hissing under the door or grumpy at the bedding, then what I'll often do is I'll come out of the new cat's room and just forget, in quotes, to close the door for a short period of time. And if the cats feel like it, they can introduce themselves. If they don't, after 15 or 20 minutes, I'll close the door again. And I just very gradually leave that door open for a longer and longer period of time until I'm seeing Harmony, and the new cat has had a chance to check out the house, and the old cats, of course, have to storm in and smell everything that the new cat has done. And so I try to just do it very, very gradually. I think my longest introduction has probably taken close to a year, but most of the time, within 6 weeks or so, I've kind of gotten everybody moved in and happy with one another and with very little fighting. But with cats, slow is the name of the game, and patience is the name of the game. Coming home and opening the cat or cold turkey is definitely a recipe for disaster in some cases.
Oh, you've watched me a few times and I see. Okay. So a lot of patience, taking, you know, the extra precautions of keeping them separated, switching scents back and forth. Wonderful ideas. We're doing this. We just have a moment or two left. We're doing this in the time of the corona pandemic. So I love the fact that you're saying you learned how to speak cat by just watching them. What would you recommend for people right now, since they're at home sheltering in with their kitties? Can they still learn cat if they haven't spoken it before?
This is like the heyday for our pets, because they're just either thrilled or they're getting totally tired of us being home all day long. But this is a great time. You know, the more time you can spend just watching what your animal is doing and then trying to kind of interpret, you know, what might he be trying to do? And you can even do some little experiments. You know, you can try to predict what he's trying to convey to you and then try to interact and see if you get the reaction you were expecting. But this is a great time while we're all kind of confined home to spend some of that time just spending it watching our animals and kind of letting them teach us what they're trying to tell us. You know, as unfortunate as it is for our economics and all the consequences of the people that have been ill, it's a great time for our animals, and it's a great time to take our time to spend learning it from them.
And I understand it's not just cat that you speak, but you have a menagerie at your home, so it's possible to speak multiple languages. So you have ferrets and ducks and turkeys and chickens and chinchillas, and can you speak turtle now too?
Actually, the turtle was spending one of his first days outside, so he is exuberantly happy today because we're finally warm enough in the Northeast for him to be out for a few hours. And I actually have a baby turkey that's been pulling at my pants leg most of our conversation, because she is asking me in not very subtle turkey terms to to get her a snack. So yes, I have gotten a lot of practice in a lot of different species.
Well, Dr. Sandra Mitchell, thank you so much for being with us today. You've given me a lot of ideas of what I need to do with my own kitty. So Dr. Sandra Mitchell, a board certified veterinary practitioner in feline and exotic companion mammal medicine. As we can tell, she is definitely fluent, not just in feline, but so many others. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.